the purpose of parables. They're wondering, Jesus, why are you talking in such ways that are hard to understand? We can't figure it out. We don't understand what you're talking about. He says, disciples came and said, why do you speak in parables? In other words, a rock throw beside it, toss alongside, giving an example of something in nature to emphasize or bring light to a spiritual principle. Well, they would hear the natural phenomena, but they would never connect to the spiritual principle. And there's something that happens, I guess, that Jesus knew. And that is, those that want to connect to the spiritual aspect will, and those that don't want to won't. And so he spoke in parables. He said, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance, but whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Now, and that's a good, that verse, we've heard it 100 times in the wrong context. That's a perfect context right there. That we as believers that understand the mystery of the gospel of Jesus Christ, how much we've been given and added to. And those that don't even understand and accept that, they got nothing. They've got nothing. Therefore, I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn, so that I should heal them. That's Isaiah 6, 9, and 10 and a couple other places, but what's what he's saying? It's not that people don't hear. It's not that those at the Super Bowl are watching it on TV with 10 million people watching don't see John 3:16, for God so loved the world, in between the goalposts, where somebody always does that, don't they? Make sure they got a sign sitting right between the goalposts, right? It's not that people don't hear. It's not that they don't see. I guarantee you there'll be hundreds of testimonies of the goodness of God and the miracles of God that come out of this Katrina. You just wait. They'll come out. Because God will profess that I am Lord. I will let the world know that I am Lord. And he will. There will not be. Why will people choose not to believe it? They harden their hearts, don't they? Lest they should be healed. Lest they should be saved. And Jesus said, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Man, we're blessed this morning. If you're hearing what I'm saying this morning, if you understand you're saved, that light came on inside of you, and boom, yeah, I get it. Wow, God, you love me that much. If that happened to you, you're blessed this morning beyond measure. And hopefully we can even begin to touch on how blessed you are this morning. For assuredly I say to you that many prophets and righteous men desire to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. There's what Old Testament saints received Christ and got saved with never seeing or hearing of Jesus. You know, Simeon got a chance to before he died. My eyes have seen the glory of your people Israel and the light of the Gentiles. You know, now I can die. But boy, are we blessed to have that light, to be able to hear, to be able to hear, to be able to see the Lord. Anytime that light is rejected, there's a hardening of the conscience for the result. Proverbs 28, 14 says, happy is the man that fears always, but he that hardens his heart shall fall into mischief. And Jesus speaks of hardening hearts all through the New Testament in the Gospels. We're not going to go there, but I made several places in Mark's Gospel. There was hardening of the heart of the Pharisees. There was hardening of the heart of the disciples when they got off the boat after the miracle of the loaves. Who's hardening your hearts? Jesus asked his disciples about your unbelief and fear. Like I was going to leave you out here in the middle of this lake to die. When they were sitting in a room and Jesus walked through the wall after everyone announced that Jesus rose from the dead, who hardened your hearts to not believe? And so there's a hardening of the heart that can happen in believers too, in disciples too, in our lives. Do you ever, when someone prays for you, for healing. Physical healing, mental, finances. I don't care any area. Are you sitting there going, oh, yeah, right? Or are you going, wow, Lord, you can really do this. You can really do this every time. You can really do. Well, at what point do we harden our hearts? I find myself sometimes, oh, man, I've got to sit here and listen to this prayer. They're praying for me, for God's blessing. And I've hardened my heart to it because it's like I don't believe anymore that God's able to do that. Don't ever lose believing. Don't ever lose that. Pray for me 100 times a day. Hey, go for it. I'm not going to refuse it. I believe God can do these things. And I'm going to love Him in spite of it. Blessed be the name. Man, that's like my favorite song. That's my favorite song. Either way, God, I bless your name. I love you. But I believe you can do this. We don't want to harden our hearts to believing that God can do this in our lives. And we do that too. Now we're going to... It says in Romans 10:10 that with the heart man believes unto righteousness. With the heart we believe. So we certainly don't want a hardened heart. We don't want a hardened heart to not walk in God's abundance because we don't really believe He can provide that abundance in our lives. We don't believe. And we accept whatever He does in our lives. But we want to believe. Over to Romans, and this is going to be a little bit of a difficult one. We're not going to camp out here a long time. But I want you guys so much to understand what God was speaking to me this week in preparing this message. In Romans 9, Paul is sort of talking about Israel, but it fits for all of us. In verse 14, speaking of God's justice, even though Israel had rejected Him, and it goes, well, I love Jacob, Esau I hated. And you go, what, God? I thought He loved everybody. Well, He does. He just honors people's choices. It's because He's got a eternal perspective on things that we don't understand. It's the only difference there. But what shall we say? Is there unrighteousness with God? Certainly not. God is righteous. Everything that happens on the planet, you can't say God's not righteous, not right. I will have mercy on whomever I will have mercy, and I will have compassion on whomever I will have compassion. So then it is not of him who wills, nor of him who runs, but of God who shows mercy. That means you can't talk it or walk it into happening, God's mercy on your life. You can't make it happen by your actions or by your will. It's His. You have mercy on your life because of God, period. It's not because of something you did to deserve it. For the Scripture says to the Pharaoh, for this very purpose I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you, that my name may be declared in all the earth. Therefore He has mercy on whom He wills, and whom He wills He hardens. And so here we're looking at it and go, God, what's the deal? You hardened Pharaoh's heart. Yeah, but Pharaoh hardened his own heart. And God declared that I am the Lord of all the earth through it, you see. And that's what He's saying. You will say to me then, why does He still find fault? For who has resisted His will? Why can you blame? God, can anybody go to hell, be condemned, if they can't resist God's will, if God's chosen it? He's putting a question before us to make us think about it here. Because there's a book back here Dave Holt wrote that says, what kind of Lord is this? What love is this? And it's basically a refuting of Calvinism, that God ordained people for hell. He created them to go to hell, and He created some for heaven. And they get they use the word of elect, and they confuse all of that issue. God's not like that. He didn't choose any. He didn't create anybody and then say, I love you, but you're going to hell, and you don't have no choice in the matter. That's not. See, we have responsibility. God has sovereignty. They both work, and they both are true. But we got to understand the heart of God. And so Paul says, well, this is the question you'd raise. If God's so powerful and has such powerful will, how could you find fault? How could He put anybody, condemn anybody to everlasting destruction? Why? How could He do that to anybody? If they didn't have a choice, if His will prevailed over them. And Paul understood this is a question that would be asked. Oh, but indeed, O man, who are you to reply against God. Will the thing formed say to him who formed it, why have you made me like this? You know, say, can you imagine any of you guys artists? I don't know, I guess not. If you were and you did an oil painting, you know, a nice oil painting and hung on the wall and you walk by and say, I didn't like the color you put over there, change it. The painting talking to the person that painted it, right? That's how absurd Paul's saying it is for us to question God's righteousness. And why have you made me like this? Does not the potter have power over the clay for the same lump to make one vessel for honor and another for dishonor? He's saying even if that was true, that God exerted his will over man to the point that man didn't have a decision in receiving Christ, even if that was true, God's still righteous. He has a right to. He made that man. He created him. He created the whole universe. Nothing would exist except God created it. But he's saying that's not the point I'm making. I'm making the point is that if you even made that kind of argument, you still got nothing to stand on. God is God. You know? What if God, wanting to show his wrath and to make his power known, endured with much long suffering the vessels of wrath prepared for destruction, and that he might make known the riches of his glory on the vessels of honor, of mercy, which he had prepared beforehand for glory, even us whom he called, not of the Jews only, but also of the Gentiles. I read that, and here's something I want us to really understand here. We need to appreciate. You need to appreciate if you're saved here this morning. You need to understand. God didn't have to. You could still be out there. You could be destined for eternal damnation. Any of us sitting here could be. But God chose us. He wanted to show his mercy and his grace on us. We don't understand how it all works like that and how God's sovereignty and man's responsibility, man's volition works, but it does work. They both work up there in heaven. And if someone to ask me, Don, are you saved because you chose to receive Christ? Or Don, are you saved because God chose you before the foundations of the world? You know what my answer would be? Well, they'd be both. But I would say, because you chose me, God. You chose me. Thank you for shedding your mercy and your grace on me. I don't deserve it. But I know that I had to make that decision to say, come into my heart. You see what I'm saying here? But if I'm going to stand here and take credit for something, I'm not going to take credit myself for making that decision to receive Christ in my heart. I want to say, God, thank you for choosing me. Your mercy, your grace is so amazing. I don't deserve it. You know what? That's how we should always be till the day he takes us home with that kind of attitude. And any kind of attitude less than that hardens our heart and sears our conscience from him, because he doesn't like a haughty spirit or an attitude that we're something. And so Paul poses that question because he knew it would be asked. He's saying, even if God picked 10 of you in here to be saved and 10 of you for hell before he even created the world, he has a right to do that. But he didn't do that. I'm going to read a few verses. He didn't do that at all. He says, what does he say?